Hello and welcome to Body and Mind Uncensored. We're your hosts, Kelly
and Talise. Combining 26 years of nursing experience, we're dedicated to sharing our expertise in mental health and women's health with as many people as possible.
Today, I'm excited to kick off Maternal Mental Health Month with a kind of a story about what we've experienced in our past, what we're still going through, and things like that. So we'll just jump on in and get started. So, Talise, tell me about your personal experiences with pregnancy.
Oh, my goodness. How long is this? Right before we got on, I asked how long we wanted this episode to be, and I didn't know you were going to ask me about my history. I've got a long, really hard story about pregnancy and labor and delivery. So, I will give you the cliff notes. Like we mentioned in our first podcast, which if you haven't listened to, go listen to it. It tells you all about Kelly and I and what our mission is here with this podcast. But kicking off Maternal Mental Health Month for May, we wanted to share our pregnancy stories and our hormone stories and our postpartum. And so my first baby, I mentioned in the last podcast that I got married young and started having a family young. And so when I was 21, we lost our first baby, and it was so hard. And I have what is called an incompetent cervix. And that means that the cervix that holds, it's like this foundation, this platform for the uterus to sit on, and that's basically where the baby exits your body. It was incompetent. Like, that's a horrible statement anyway, right? Like, oh, I'm incompetent. So I was 5 months along and had gone into one of my regular OBGYN appointments. They had even done like an ultrasound and a vaginal probe ultrasound and looked at things, and everything seemed to be fine. And I went home that day and just remember, this is my first baby, so I didn't know what labor felt like, but I was for sure like, this has got to be labor, but I'm only 5 months pregnant. And I was just at the doctor. So I went to the ED and found out I was truly in full-blown labor, only 5 months along. And it was going to be hard to reverse it. But they did send me to the women's floor, and then they put me on magnesium. And magnesium was to just like relax all my muscles and everything. And they kept me on the high dose for 3 days in Trendelenburg, which in the medical world means that you're basically on your head. They were trying to reverse the progress of labor and to get the amniotic sac to go back to where it was instead of bulging through my cervix. But sadly, that did not work. What they were hoping to do is to put a cerclage in, and a cerclage is like a stitch, like a purse string, and they go around your cervix and then they pull it tight so that you can carry the baby longer, hopefully closer to term, which is 40 weeks. And I was 22 weeks. So that didn't work. Unfortunately, it was very miserable. It was one of the hardest times of my life. It was mentally challenging and physically challenging. I was in pain. I was uncomfortable. I was mentally just struggling with, this is my first experience with a pregnancy and my baby, my perfect baby. I was trying to do everything I could to try and reverse that, which I know now. I'd like to add, I hadn't been to nursing school. Like, this was when I was 20, before I'd gone to nursing school. And this is actually the experience that propelled me into nursing rather than teaching, is that there were good nurses and there were nurses that weren't so great. And I really wanted to be one of those great nurses, because it can make or break a person's experience and really carry on for their entire lives. So I lost the baby. And it was not because of anything I did, but it sure felt like that at the time. And while I'd lost the baby, and then they moved me, like they would move any mother who had just delivered a baby to the postpartum floor. And then that just sent me into an even worse spiral, because you've got babies being wheeled through the hospital on the hallways, and here I was mourning the loss of my baby and feeling like I wasn't competent to carry a baby. And I had a nurse that was not so kind and basically told me to buck it up, and I don't really care if you've had an IV in this arm for the last 3 days, we're gonna take your blood pressure. Anyway, long story short, I ended up getting a different nurse and being moved to a different floor so that it wasn't in my face. So that was really the start of my motherhood, my experience with labor and delivery. And that's where I was like, this has got to be better. We've got to do a better job of taking care of our mothers. And this is such a stressful time. And I did. I spent the next 3 weeks in bed just reading books on grieving and how I could do better for myself and be healthier going forward. And then the rest, there's traumatic stories to the rest of my child bearing, but this was really what prompted me to be a nurse and to want to go into labor and delivery and the mental health aspect of it.
Yeah, it is so hard when you lose a baby. I can't speak from personal experience, but knowing all the women that I did help in my postpartum and labor and delivery years who had experienced loss, it is something you just feel so alone and definitely blame yourself for no reason. You know, there's no reason. Mm-hmm. It's nothing that you did, nothing you could have prevented. But for some reason, we always want to blame ourselves for anything that goes wrong in our lives that we don't have total control over.
We do.
Yeah. It's so hard. Well, my pregnancy story is definitely a lot different. I had a very easy pregnancy, no morning sickness, nothing super crazy. The only time I would get sick is when I brushed my teeth. Other than that, it was perfect. I loved being pregnant. I wanted to do it over and over and over, but I only had the experience one time.
I would have let you carry all of my babies.
You know, at one point when I still had a uterus, I thought about being a surrogate, but yeah, didn't go there. But I will say my delivery story is probably one of the most traumatic experiences.
I think it is for a lot of people.
Yeah, having a wonderful pregnancy and then going in and knowing that this child that you have held in your body for so long, now you have to expel it, right? I did not have family support. My husband at the time and I were stationed in North Carolina. So I did not have any family around or any what this looked like or what to even expect.
Because you weren't a nurse either, right?
I was not a nurse.
Same boat I was in.
Yep. I was 20 years old and very young. And my contractions started really early. And I would go in and they'd check me and, oh no, you're not dilated enough. Go home.
A story every mother has, right?
Yep.
First time.
Always.
This is it.
Yep. Yeah. Got home after the third time and laid down in bed. And 2 minutes later, my water broke. So we were going back to the hospital. It was pretty early
in
the morning.
Did you know what it was?
My water.
Did you know that you're bad? Yeah.
Well, I felt like I had to pee.
Yeah.
And so I got up and it was like, oh, that felt different. Like, that doesn't feel like
that
a normal.
Feel like pee. I've lost all control of my bladder.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely weird. So I called labor and delivery and explained what I felt. And they said, well, come back in. And my contractions after my water broke got so much stronger. It was ridiculous. I thought they were bad to begin with. They were off the charts.
Even worse.
So yeah, it was really early in the morning. I want to say like 4:30 or something like that in the morning doing this because it hurt so bad and I had been going through contractions for so long. So I got my epidural really early and I don't feel like the epidural worked the way it was supposed to. I did have the anesthesiologist come in another time and redo it. And it was just, labor was not easy. And for those women who can go without an epidural,
I know those home births. Can you even?
Oh, and yeah, I can not even imagine.
I can barely stay home with a cold and not feel like I'm dying. So people who deliver at home it's a whole new respect for them.
Definitely. Yeah. I clearly don't do pain very well. But yeah, eventually, you know, later on that evening, I did end up delivering. But knowing now what happened during my labor, If I had known then what I know now, I would have told the nurses and the doctor to get me back for a C-section. They were flipping me all over the place. I had no idea what
your story
was even going on.
It's about empowering, right? So let's stop and pause on that for a minute. Why didn't you feel like you could?
I didn't know. I had no idea. You know, I was 20 years old, was there with my husband at the time, and it was brand new world for me. I just didn't know. And I think that that's the thing, you know, so many women don't know, especially first time moms. You just don't know.
If you don't have like an older sister or friends that have you, I was right there with you, just in the dark.
Yeah. And I didn't have a mom. I didn't have a mom that even knew, you know, what it was like to give birth. Even if I did have my mom, which we'll get into in another episode.
Yeah,
I don't want to go there. That's a whole nother ball of wax. But just being, you know, brand new. And so when I was a nurse on labor and delivery, I knew that feeling of, okay, I'm alone. I don't know what's going on. What should I expect? And I was that voice for that woman. I don't feel like I had nurses or anybody that were my voice. So being an advocate and a voice, if something didn't feel right, when I knew, gave me a whole nother perspective on giving birth. And I feel like I was able to help more women to get out of those scary situations. Luckily I was able to deliver normally. But it was definitely very scary time.
For sure. And yeah, all my pregnancies, you know, other than my first one, went relatively, not pregnancies, my pregnancies were pure hell. The deliveries. My pregnancies were really bad, but my deliveries went relatively smooth and they were still traumatic. So those poor mothers that have traumatic deliveries, just, I don't know. It's just a hard situation to be in with no support. Was your army family, were they supportive? Did you have?
I didn't really have, we didn't have much. We lived off base. It was just me and my husband. I was actually discharged from the military. My husband was still in, but I got out early when I found out that I was pregnant because we didn't want to risk both being deployed. So, I was out of the army at that time.
That was probably a good plan.
So tell me about postpartum. How was your postpartum life?
Oh, postpartum for me, like you, I have a different, like my stepmother lives in Idaho, and my sisters, I was the oldest, so they weren't married, they didn't have kids, and I was really kind of like this trailblazer for both families as far as having kids, and not a lot of support. My mom lived hours away, my husband went right back to work, because we needed the money. So he didn't have paternity leave. In fact, I think that's something that's new.
Yeah.
And couldn't come fast enough because I can't even imagine the difference that having that support home, you know, at home for those hard months and weeks, that's amazing. And so kudos to whoever got that bill passed, that fathers or partners, whomever can take that time off to be there to support the baby and the mom. That's so great. But no, I was home alone, and it was surreal. It was trying to heal, right? Because your body has gone through this traumatic event. It's been torn apart. It's done this amazing process for 9 months. But then all of a sudden, your hormones are changing, and you're sad. You have this new baby, but you don't understand why you're so sad. You should be happy, you know, for 8-9 months. That's what we did, is we planned for it, and we built the nursery and just the excitement, and then all of a sudden that kind of, it's like Christmas, right? It's that buildup is gone, and that leaves like a void. And so even though I had this baby, and I will tell you that after the first one that we lost, my second one was 6 weeks premature, and I asked you if you knew what that was when your water broke, because my poor incompetent cervix with my second child, they did put that cerclage, that stitch in it, when I was 12 weeks pregnant. And then my water broke 6 weeks or early when I was laying in bed and I thought, oh my gosh, I've peed my pants. It woke me up out of sleep. I was like, my body's going to hell. So I thought I peed my pants. So I got up and I went and sat down on the toilet and it stopped. And then I'd stand up and the gush would come out. And what I didn't know at the time, you know, first baby, hadn't gone to nursing school, is that our bodies replenish that fluid. And so even if your water breaks, it's still going to provide more. And so if you shift, it'll let more out. Or if the baby's, you know, kind of blocking the exit for where that fluid comes out, you can not have more fluid come out, or, you know, as you move, it does. So I went to the ED for that one, but he was premature. He was 6 weeks premature. And so I didn't get to bring home a baby from the hospital again. He was in the NICU for a few weeks, and that was PTSD, right? The last time I had a baby, I didn't leave the hospital with a baby. I didn't have a live baby. And this time the baby was alive, but was in the NICU on oxygen and feeding tubes. And holy cow, what a range of emotions, right? Like, I had a baby. I'm sore. I'm sad. I'm excited. I'm going home now without a baby. And just such a range of emotions. So a lot of depression and anxiety and trying to stay up and pump so that I could give my baby breast milk, because everybody hears breast is best, right? And that's a huge stress to place on a mother. We all know it's best, but we can't all do it. And so just a lot of hard things right there in the beginning.
Yeah, I think that my postpartum, the biggest stressors in my postpartum life, I mean, of course, not having family around, that was really hard. But we did end up moving back to Utah about 6 months after my daughter was born. Actually, was it 6 months? A couple months after my daughter was born. And so I did have some family support then. But I think that my biggest area of concern was breastfeeding. You know, you never know how much your baby's actually getting. Are they getting the nutrients that they need?
Kelly, don't you just feed them when they cry? It's not that easy, is it?
It's not. It's no. So hard. And again, it's not anything that anybody can prepare you for. It's just one of those things, you know. It's not like you can see through and see how much they're getting. You know, they say weigh diapers and how many wet and poopy diapers is your baby having, but it doesn't ever feel like enough.
Especially if they're crying, right?
Like especially if they're crying, or, you know, they're
like, you're not giving them enough.
Yeah. And my daughter, when she was born, she was super long and she was very thin. And so I had people criticizing me all the time. Well, you're not giving her enough. You need to supplement. She's not getting enough food. And that was really stressful for me too, on top of knowing, you know, already, is my baby getting enough nutrients to having others tell me that I needed to supplement? And then I'd take her to the doctor and they said, oh, she's, you know, on the right scale. She's growing as she should. Good. Based on
set your mind at ease with that.
Yeah. Yeah. But others around me, family members, constantly telling me, you're not feeding your baby. She should be chunky. She's never been chunky her whole life. She was always tall and skinny. But anyway, I think that was my biggest thing. That and, you know, SIDS was one of those. Scary
things. This
was
before all that technology, right? Like, thank goodness for technology.
Yeah, we did not have outlets and things like that. And so, yeah, we did have baby monitors that did not have cameras. So I would just stay up all night listening to that baby monitor, making sure that she was breathing, going in and checking on her all the time. And I feel like I did not know the signs or what to look for until just recently. You get hyper-focused on things. That is one of the symptoms of postpartum depression. I didn't know that. I just learned that, you know, fairly recently, even as a nurse. And so, you know,
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. These are the things that they don't tell you. So I think we could do a whole podcast just on the symptoms and what to watch for postpartum depression. I think we could talk about a whole slew of things that people just don't even know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hyper-focused on breastfeeding issues and SIDS, those were definitely big stressors. Mm-hmm. And you're not given a playbook when it comes mm-hmm. to being a new mom, being a parent. There's no...
Well, and even if there were, we all know how different they each are, right? So if it was like, change your baby every 2 hours, feed your baby every 3 hours, that's not going to work for every baby.
Yep. Well, and every woman is different. As we have just heard, just two of our stories, we're totally different in both of our experiences. But at the end of the day, we both ended up having babies, and we have some of the same overall worries. And I think that's normal. People have worries. It's just the identifying it when it's getting to a point where, is this a concern? And I think that's what we need to start to share with others.
So what would you do? Oh, like when your baby, let's say you were feeding your baby and she would just cry and cry and cry, and you didn't know how to soothe her. You didn't know how, like, you've, her diaper's changed, right? She's, all of her needs have been met. What would you do?
It was so stressful. I didn't know what to do. Half the time they'd say, oh, let them cry it out. They'll cry it out. I just could not listen to her cry all the time. It hurt my heart. And I would end up picking her up and carrying her around. And she was fine if she was being cuddled. And that was another thing. Oh, you're cuddling too much. You're holding too much.
I remember that. The controversy of holding your, or if you pick up your baby every time they cry, they're not learning to self-soothe. Yeah. That was so taboo.
Yeah. I don't know if that still goes around, but...
I don't know either. Tell us.
Yeah. That
what is out there? I know that there's some tummy time that needs to be done, and kids now have limited screen time, but...
Yeah. My daughter, she's 24 now, so it's been a minute since I had a baby. I don't know what the latest and greatest is on picking up your baby when they're crying. I would love to hear what's out there.
I would too. But with that being said, we still need to do what we feel is best, right? Like even if the professionals are telling us, don't let your baby cry or let your baby cry. If we've got that motherly instinct, that parental instinct, that if we want to pick up our baby and love on him, who's to tell us we can't?
Absolutely.
Come on. Like you do what you think is best until you know better, and then do better. That's all we can.
And I think there's so much misinformation out there too, right? And it goes back to social media was not around when I gave birth. 24 years ago, we did not have social media. And we didn't really have Google. I mean, we had basic, dial-up internet and chat things. But it was definitely not like it is now. And so I think having all that misinformation, it was bad enough hearing from mother-in-law or whoever that you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right. I can only imagine what the pressures of social media are today and feeling like you're not doing things right. But I love that. Go with your gut. You are the parent. You are your child's, support system. And if you feel like you need to do something, by all means do it.
Yeah. You're their best advocate. And you know what? We're going to all make mistakes. Even if what you thought was great at the time, I can't tell you how many regrets I have for how I've raised my kids. They're all wonderful, absolutely amazing adults, and I love hanging out with them. But I could have done things better, We learn as we go, and we do better as we learn.
Yeah. But one thing on that topic, one thing that I always beat myself up for, which is crazy if you think about it, is, I started back to school. I was a single mom, and she was really young. She was 5 years old when I started going back to school. And looking back now, after I graduated, I was like, wow, I missed so much of her life. She's 24 now. And it took me all those years to go through school and get my degree. And was that selfish of me to do that? Because I missed out on her life, going to school and doing night classes and things like that, and having other people, quote unquote, raise my child. But at the end of the day, I did something to better our lives. Even though she was older when I graduated, that is something that I always beat myself up. Yeah. That I missed out on her childhood.
Well, and unfortunately, today, in two-income families are... Anymore, you have to have a two-income family to have a family, to be able to even live. And so I think a lot of parents have that guilt going on because they are having to take their babies to a daycare or to family members. And all I would have to say about that is how great that we can also have the influence of others on our children. I think if I would have been the only influence on my kids, I'm sure they wouldn't have turned out how they did. So we just need to look at it as I am doing the best for our family. I'm providing food. I'm going to work. I'm going to school to give her a better home life and outcome. And yeah, like she's going to have to spend some time with other people and just look at it as that's great. You know, this person has a great influence on them.
But also knowing that what we have done, setting that example to our kids that you can do anything. You can go to school. You can be a mom. You don't have to be a mom and go to school or do it before you become a mom. Yeah. Whatever they learn from our experiences, I think that's a positive thing. And I think that that's one thing now. My daughter says, well, I want to have a family, but I want to wait. I want to make sure that I'm stable and secure before I do that. And kudos to her for that. That's what I would love for her if that's what she wants. If she wanted to get married and have kids right now, I would be totally happy with that as well. But knowing that I have raised a successful and confident woman at the end of the day makes my heart happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. We're not perfect and we're going to make mistakes. And thankfully, humans are forgiving. And our minds are forgiving and we just move on and do better. Yeah. Definitely. I have a lot of things I regret as a parent. And I think that's just part of parenting because I still have them. They're all raised and they're all grown and don't live at home. And I still suffer from those things of, oh, I should have been better about this just even last week. So just constantly doing better.
Yeah. I really loved the discussion today, and I think we gave a good insight on what we've experienced. I would love to hear whether you send it in a chat, and we can share your stories as well with the audience. But Talise, what would you like to leave us with today?
So I just wanted to continue from our last episode about talking about body affirmations. I talked a little bit about the struggle of comparing ourselves with others and our own mind and getting in our heads about how we look. And like I said last time, the one that stuck out to me was my body is the least interesting thing about me. So true. So this next one feeds a little bit off of that. And it's just a short, don't let your mind bully your body. And I just really like that because we really talk about bullies, right? We don't allow bullying. We don't. If our kids came home from school and said somebody was bullying them, we'd put an end to it. And so why do we allow ourselves to bully our bodies, right? We tell ourselves in our head, oh my gosh, look at my butt in those. That's so huge. We'd never say that to somebody else. So we need to really have compassion for our bodies that get us through this life, that produce babies, that keep us healthy, that heal. Like they're amazing, amazing things. And so let's not let our minds bully our bodies.
Love
that. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much. On our next podcast, I'm hoping that we can continue our conversation about maternal mental health. Again, we would love to hear anything that you would like to share with us. What's going on out in the world?
What's on your mind?
Those and misinformation that you would like us to address as well. So anything that you would love to share, please send our way and we will talk about it. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
If you or someone you know has thoughts of hurting themselves or others, please text or call 988. They will direct you to someone in your community that can help. You can also call 911 in an emergency.
Remember, you never know what someone else is going through. Sending peace and love to all. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook.